Welcome to episode 17 of the Just Keep Spinning podcast. I'm Andrea and I'm here with
Andrew.
And we actually have a special guest today. So say hi, Jeff.
Hey.
He's the only one that say hi, Jeff.
it's Jeff. So really quick, Jeff, are there any social media handles you want to give out?
Oh, yeah. My social media is Instagram, and it's The All Electric Kitchen. And pretty much that's it. I mean, it's the only one that I use.
So that's the only. So if you see Jeff on Twitter, that's not him.
Yeah, I don't have a Twitter, nor do I. I'm in the process of like working on a website.
Oh, okay.
But it's a very, very far from even beginning. Actually, it's just in my head.
I'm working on it. The page design in my head.
But if anything, it's just Instagram is where I, you know, show most of my work and post anything about updates or whatever.
Okay, cool. And really quick, our Instagram is Just Keep Spinning Podcast. You can email us at justkeepspinningpodcast@gmail.com. Sorry, there's some little stuff going on behind the scenes I'm laughing at. And so if you want to tell us you love us or you hate us or you think we suck, go ahead, email us. I don't care. DM us on Instagram. And pretty soon we will be airing on KDIF 102.9. So when that actually happens, you guys will know. We actually did record a very special episode for KDIF that's not going to be more than likely put up like on iTunes and all of that. That will only be aired on KDIF. So when that comes, we'll let you guys know. That way you can listen to it. And really quick, let me go ahead and jump into an event I want to highlight. So the event that I wanted to highlight, it's at Gracie's Tax Bar on October 8th. It's going to be a DJ set by Davina. And Gracie's Tax Bar is at 711 North 7th Avenue in Phoenix. And there's no cover, so that's what's really cool. It's always nice to go to events where you don't have to pay, but you can go up to support and do whatever you want. And Jeff, is there anything you wanted to highlight coming up?
This upcoming Friday on October 5th, I'll be having a mini exhibition at Grand Avenue Records. And that's located on 15th Street and Grand Avenue. It's where 15th Avenue, Grand Avenue. It's where Grand Ave, Roosevelt, and 15th Ave meet and kind of just have this awkward meeting at that point. So it's right there. It's pretty much sandwiched between Trans Am and Bikini Lounge. It's a mini exhibition of current work that I'll be presenting, work that will be on canvas and the pots that I've been painting. Probably talk about that later, I guess. I don't know. But it's there and you'll be there as well.
Yeah, so I'm going to be there. The group that I'm in, the Crate Creepers, which is an all ladies record club. Our Instagram is actually just Crate Creepers, C-R-A-T-E Creepers. And we'll be there providing music for the night. So, and there's also going to be...
Oh, there's also going to be an instant photo booth. So I share a space with a friend of mine. And what he does is he's going to be taking photographs with film and developing it on the spot. So you'll be able to... take it home with you. So that's what's really rad about what he's going to be doing. So
the picture, the film, the pictures that he takes, do they cost like money?
Oh yeah, they do. Know? Yeah, it costs it, and it's not that much. I mean, it's $10 for. I mean, it's. I say it's reasonable.
Like if you go to Starbucks and get like some large coffee, it's almost probably the same.
Yeah,
amount
I mean,
of money.
It's
you
it's
get
right
to keep
there.
It forever.
Boom. Yeah, you definitely do, and he's a really nice guy. And like, I mean, if he even wanted, he probably would scan the photo for you, so you would have a digital copy. So it's $10 a photograph, and it's, you know, to be taken with an old, you know, an old school camera, and it's filmed and it's developed on the spot. So I mean, shit, like a lot of that stuff is just very. In terms of even the materials, so.
Yeah, like, where else are you really going to, honestly, somebody's going to do that for you?
Yeah.
And that's just a really cool, neat thing to experience, so.
Yeah, definitely.
I know I'm going to be paying that $10 to get my picture taken, so. And let's see, pickups. Andrew, have we had any pickups lately?
Not that I can think of off the top of my head that we got. I got you the stuff from Steakmeats, but did we talk about that?
I can't remember because time... is just outrageous, and I don't remember when we exactly got that, but I think we did because I got the Basement Beehive, the Daptones 45. I think I talked about wanting it, but we hadn't got it yet, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's how it went.
Yeah, so anyways, we picked up some good stuff from Stinkweeds, and We haven't really gotten any. We, like I said, we've been trying to be good. What about you, Jeff? Have you been good and not really gotten anything the past few weeks? Or
Well, I was recently in Tucson, so I was able to find an album by Billy Paul, War of the Gods, and Kitaro, the Oasis. It was a German release. And, oh, I found Judy Garland. I've been looking
for which one?
Well, it was like a best of, but I was looking for I Feel a Song Coming On. And so that was a particular song that I was looking for. And I was able to finally find it on a best of by Judy Garland.
So, you guys have to, if you've been consistently listening to the podcast, we've talked about Jeff before, and we've talked about how when he would come to E.T., the Tres Leches Cafe and Spin, and he would blow E.T.'s mind.
And Jeff would just tell people, they just weren't ready for it.
Some people aren't ready for some different type of music.
I mean, I had an experience like that this weekend, and people weren't ready for it.
Yeah, so, that's Jeff. Jeff's the guy that comes, and we talked about as well how he came to the record show, and he was spinning, and E.T., you were spinning E.T.'s mind out then, too.
Yeah, so good. Yeah, this is Jeff, and we're going to talk to Jeff today.
Yeah, okay.
But on Jeff's date of birth, his song, do you know the number one song on your date of birth?
Take a wild guess.
Oh, man. So 86, 84. Is it something by Billy Idol?
No.
That's a pretty decent guess, I guess.
I mean, yeah. The number one song on your date of birth the week of was Sarah by Starship. I don't know that song.
I think is Starship the same group that does that? The Muppets took that song. God, this city's built on rock and roll. That's Starship, isn't it?
I don't know.
I have no idea. Yeah,
I don't know. To my knowledge, I don't know that song.
I just remember. I see it a lot.
The Starship?
I see Starship albums a lot. Like, yeah. Just dig it around, even in thrift stores. I just.
That's true. Because that they've
been calling to.
Yeah.
They're all, you love this song,
it's,
Jeff.
It's followed me since 86.
So we always do for our guest the song when they were 14 years old, supposed to define your life. So I always do the top 10 on that day because it was in the 2000s. So people who are our age remember all this music. Anybody who's younger than that probably doesn't remember. Or older, they probably remember too. But number 10 was Smooth by Santana. Dre's favorite song. Number 9 at the time was Blink 182, All the Small Things. Number 8 was Celine Dion, That's the Way It Is.
I know.
Number 7 was Backstreet Boys, Show Me the Meaning of Being Lonely.
Yeah, where it's all sad and they're wearing black and stuff.
Number 6 was Bye 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 by NSYNC, your favorite, Rhea.
NSYNC. I liked NSYNC over VSB. That's why he's saying that.
Number 5 was Montel Jordan, Get It On Tonight.
I like that song. That's like he had a Cadillac Escalade in that song. I remember everybody wanted that vehicle after that.
Yeah, he was the one who started the trend. Number 4 was Savage Garden, I Knew I Loved You.
Oh.
I mean, you guys both were like, huh. Number 3 was Faith Hill, Breathe.
Okay, I remember that song.
Number 2 was Maria Maria by Santana. He's on this motherfucker twice.
Dang, oh, wow. Santana's ruling your life in Starship.
Well, I do like his version. I think it's called A Fisherman's Son or Son of a Fisherman. Yeah. I think that's the name of the song.
And number 1, on the date of your birth, when you were 14 years old, what do you think it was?
Yeah, what do you think? Because I don't even know the answers, honestly.
Was it a Britney Spears?
No. I don't know who this is. So.
Oh, I don't know then.
Amazed by Lone Star.
It's a country song. And the only reason I remember, because back then my friend Megan would troll the internet, the AOL chat rooms, and some guy she was talking to dedicated to her, and then he started talking to me in another chat and dedicated it to me too. So
that's fucking corny.
And it was, because I was like, I don't know you, stranger, and I don't like that song. No, I mean, I'm just, but yeah, I just remember that song distinctly because of that. But I'm sorry, Jeff, that that's your number one.
Yeah, it's supposed to,
it's supposed to define your life.
Oh god.
So I guess, what's it called? I don't remember what it's called.
I can't currently remember how the song
Amazed
goes.
By Lone Star. So So when we're done here, we're going to play that song as we're wrapping everything up, and you're going to be like, oh my gosh, this defines my fucking life.
Yeah, a lot of those songs, I mean, I know who they are, but never really listened to it.
Yeah, you don't actively seek it out.
Yeah, it wasn't.
All right, let's get into this week, Drea.
Okay, so obviously your subject today is Jeff, and we always talk about how no matter who we run to, like, everybody knows who you are. So I debated on calling this episode the 6 degrees of Jeff-eration because everybody knows you. It's so funny. So let's start from the beginning. So Jeff, where are you from?
Oh, well, I'm here from originally all over, I guess. I don't know. I just kind of started from Phoenix and pretty much made a big circle around back to the valley, you know. I lived on the res, Navajo res, and then moved back to the Phoenix area, like my teenage years, and kind of been back since. And yeah, I guess maybe how people know me is just because of the artwork. Like, I don't know. I usually tend to talk to people, and people talk to me, I guess. I don't know.
You're an open-minded person.
Yeah, I guess I could be pretty chatty sometimes, I guess. I have no idea. Yeah, I've always been intrigued by that, I guess. I don't know. Kind of feels silly that it's brought up, but plus Phoenix is just kind of a small area in itself, I think, and especially living in the downtown area, so in a centralized part of the city. But I just think mostly because of the artwork. Yeah.
You're all networking through art, basically.
Yeah, basically, yeah. I think it's just because I'm always at the art shows, and sometimes I would not really be at the art shows. I don't know. It's just a funny thing. Well, it feels a little silly now.
And I think, too, because your style is really, unique and recognizable. So a lot of times they're like, oh, who does that? And they look, and they're like, oh, okay, it's, like, memorable. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
I know you probably don't feel that way because you make the actual art, but as an observer, that's what I would say. Like, if I would see something, I'm like, I know that's Jeff. Like, has Jeff written all over it?
Yeah, it could be, yeah. And there was a moment too where I was just kind of running around and trying to put the work out there in itself by, you know, actually going to different cafes or different shops and being like, who do I talk to in order to get this work hung? So, the work itself come a long way as long as myself, I guess.
So when you were younger, did anyone in your family listen to music when you were growing up or?
Yeah, I think music just played a huge role. Like my life growing up, it was always there. A lot of it was probably through my uncle. You know, through my uncle, I really got into listening to a lot of Tool. So I was really into Tool growing up, and I think even at one point tried to mimic Maynard's hair by shaving my head, shaving the sides of my head. So there were things like that. It's mostly kind of, I guess, kind of popular music, metal, I guess. At the time it was most metal or just rock, or I wouldn't know how to categorize it, but it was a lot of either Tool or Stone Temple Pilots too. Like, it followed me with that. I guess it's just it was always everywhere. There wasn't really a set thing. I think it wasn't until I was a teenager that I actually started to really have a stronger appreciation for music. I think it's, but other than that, and nothing really too much with my family. I think maybe, if never mind, my mom always listened to a lot of Cure, and I think that played played a big role in my life, growing up, a lot of 80s. She listens to a lot of 80s pop music, and then as I got older, I started to listen to things that maybe were they're not too obscure, but I mean, something that wasn't The Cure or Depeche Mode or different bands like that, you know, people that we listen to, I don't know. I like the styles of OMD or some Duran Duran, not a whole lot, but then bring it down to things that I would play at Tres Leches, Tuxedo Moon or recently I came across the Gray on a vinyl and kind of regrettably didn't buy it. And so it was stuff like that. I mean, a lot of the stuff I really like are very synth pop heavy, or just synthesized, a lot of synthesizer music.
That's how you blow everyone's mind with those synth sounds.
I guess so. I think it's just probably just a little strange. I mean, especially probably maybe playing that kind of music in Tres Leches. Like, I try not to get too weird with it. I mean, I'll throw in whatever, I guess.
Well, it's because and it's because like the vibe, like especially when he would come to play, was very like. They don't limit you there on what you can play. It's just the vibe, like, because you're always like reading the room a little bit, so you see how people are responding, and not that anyone would necessarily respond negatively. Because, like I said, ET's loving it, but sometimes it's just I think people are set on a certain vibe for that day when they come in because it's what they're used to, so they're like not responding negatively, but they're just looking for like some oldies, basically, or some, maybe some soul music, and they're not ready for Jeff to come on the tables and just. Kill it.
They can't handle it.
Yeah, well, yeah, I guess. Yeah, it always just feels a little.
Well, I remember I had asked you too. I was like, oh, like, do you DJ or anything? You're like, no. And I'm like, well, sure. I sure thought you had experience from what you're playing and how you're playing and stuff.
Oh, no. I guess really, maybe if anything, like, it could be based on making old cassettes. I don't know. I used to make playlists on like for cassettes or even like CDs, which doesn't exist anymore. Really, I've noticed. I mean, I made a mixtape for my 7-year-old. Well, she's turning 9 tomorrow, but when she was 7 years old, I made her a mixtape and bought her a cassette tape or player, and she was just like, I don't know what is this, and it was kind of interesting to see it and just kind of. I mean, I'm not even that old, but like I'm only 32, so I just kind of there's a big difference in like the 10 years of like making like a mix on a CD or even a mix on a cassette. So
what kind of stuff did you put on there for her?
Oh, just stuff that I thought that she could dig. I mean, there was I put Cosmic Dancer by T-Rex on there, and then I put some like David Bowie. Just kind of just really mellow stuff that I could think of.
Stuff that's not like that maybe wouldn't not too intense right off the bat, like getting her palette wet, be like, okay,
yeah,
this
just
is
a little bit. I mean, like kind of maybe like maybe a little melodic side of like Sonic Youth, the, you know, bands like that. Or I even had like My Bloody Valentine on there with like Slow Dive, just things that I have like bands that I really appreciate. And, then other different things that I knew that would be really weird to her. So I wanted her to be able to experience something that could have been considered really popular or considered something that was like, well, you know, what is this? So, but she said she liked it. I mean, recently when she stayed with me for a weekend, we went in shopping and I got her a cassette, and it was a Sade. We found it on cassette. So
nice.
Everyone loves Sade.
Yeah. So well, she wanted to buy something, and so I said, well, if you want to buy something here, you can spend $2 on this.
It's like my daughter. She has a little bit of records, but she collects cassettes more, and I don't want to say pushed her down that path, but got her interested in that, and I was happy because cassettes are a little bit more economical than records. Like, so, and they work just fine, and I feel like it's like a thing where, I mean, there's nothing wrong because we listen to music on. I'm sure you might listen to music on your phone too, but there's something about like a record or even like a cassette where you kind of have to have the patience to really be in tune to listen to it.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel so. I mean, yeah, it's still, I have Spotify, but the thing is with my, I don't really listen to it. Like, and mainly probably because my headphone jack is broken on my phone.
Is it more just kind of like struggle. Noise sort
yeah,
of thing?
Yeah, it's kind of just like really messy. So I still stick to my like my collection of like CDs and vinyl and cassette that, you know, it's basically what I'm listening to in the studio. So it's just the same CDs that I have that I listen to on repeat, which is like, like right now I've just been listening to a lot of Meat Beat Manifesto. I've been just listening.
So what is that? Because I don't know what that is. So what is that? Is that like the synth stuff?
Well, not really. I mean, it's just like, I'm not really good with like the genres or anything like that. But I mean, they are from like, the album that I have is like early 90s. And it's a little bit of like, I guess it could be branched off from something that could be considered like acid, you know, like a very, I wouldn't say techno, but it's, the sounds are just a lot of manipulation of sounds. I know that he's used like a lot of like, I think he even uses like the 808s. So he uses a lot of machines in it, and it's just one person actually. But I think well, on the album that I've been listening to, which is a Sublime, I think it's Sublime Sandwiches. I don't know if it's plural or just one sandwich.
How many there is available? Yeah,
how many there is.
How many sandwiches is this guy getting on?
Yeah, but that's, I've been listening, it's a two-disc album. I've been listening to Side 2 a lot. And that's where the name of the upcoming show comes from, Electric People.
Oh, okay.
But, I mean, a lot of the names for the shows that I come up with are actually the song titles of songs, like of.
So they tie into like
so,
stuff
yeah.
that you're like gravitate towards, kind
of. Yeah, a lot of them came from like either like My Bloody Valentine or like Slow Dive songs. So if people are familiar with it, they'll probably know what I'm like talking about.
I think you just like interesting noises, like you just like stuff that's like that sounds good to you, and not that maybe everybody doesn't understand, but it's like that's really going to make you pay attention, sort of thing. It's going
to
grab
guess.
You.
Well, I really like just a lot of distortion. Sometimes I could just listen to white noise. I don't know why, but it's calming to me. And it's, I mean, if you like when I listen to a lot of the very like kind of avant-garde side sounds of like Aphex Twins, or Aphex Twin, when you hear his style, it's just like, you know, a lot of. It's in your ear. You know, it's very static. But at the same time, you could really hear that it's composed. It's not, you know, to me, I feel like there is a pattern to it rather than some sort of random shifting of noise and, you know, all of it. But
it's intentional.
Yeah, very. That's what I feel. I feel like it's intentional. But that's just like me when I listen to it. And
yeah, that's what I take away from it.
And that's where, like, again, like I really like his music. And so, like, with the last show that I had, it was at a Bloom on Grand Avenue, and that one was called the Select Ambient of I can't even think. I'm like really bad with titles of songs and names and anything. But if you talk, I'd be like, yeah, it's like me and Andrew were talking about that. I was just like, I could remember like the side of the vinyl or the side of the cassette and the track number.
But I don't know the title of that song. It's that one song. It sounds really dope.
Yeah. It's Side 2, Track 1.
But I think a lot of people remember that. I mean, you have to really be dedicated, not necessarily dedicated, because it's not like you're not dedicated to listening to an artist, but to take the time to learn every track name, you know, you have to be have like a little bit of what's the word?
Well, I think too, just as you get older, like when you're younger, like you're kind of just, most people don't have like as many responsibilities, so you'll listen to something and you're like, you know, touching it and like looking at it. Because I'm like I'm like one of those people where I'll read like every single little line. Like the liner notes and crap. So, but like as I get older, like I still try to read that stuff, but maybe not as much as I used to, because I just don't have the time to just sit there and just be like, let me take time for myself to read this sort of thing.
Yeah. I'm pretty much like that too sometimes.
So, like with, you know, obviously you're an artist, that's your full time job. What was one of the things, like, can you remember like a memory that is like defines you as like a someone who enjoys music, who is driven by music within your art? Because you can tell you are driven by music driven, like you said. You sometimes it might just be white noise, but you always some type of noise.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I don't know. It's just always been there. That music. I don't know. It's always been comforting, I think. And your question is like, how does it play a role in my paintings?
Yeah.
Or my work?
Yeah, does it influence his art?
Yeah, how does it influence your art?
You know, I really don't know. I mean, there are even moments when I'm in the studio that I don't push play on the CD player, and it'll be like silent for like 3 hours, and I'll just be painting. But like, I just think that music has always been everywhere, and I think it wasn't until recently that because for a while there, I always had my headphones on. Like, and it probably could be because the headphone jack on my phone is broken. But, like, for a while there, that's all I would do is just always, everywhere I went, it was, like, music, you know, some sort of music. And it was just very comforting, and it was just something I listened to a lot of. And how it plays a role in it, it's just, it's always been, like, a background sound. And it's always been some sort of maybe like a motivator, like the rhythm of it. You know, it's some nights, like I said, I've been listening to a lot of like Meat Beat Manifesto. And then it'll be a moment where I'll just like, I typically listen to the same album like over and over and over. Like I just constantly push play until like maybe it'd be like two nights of listening to the same thing. And then finally I'll like put in a different CD or just like not listen to anything at all. But if anything, it's just it's just always there. I don't know how like if it, how much of a how much it plays like into it. I think if anything, I like creating playlists for like shows that I have if I have the ability to do it. Like the last show was at the A Bloom, so I was able to create a playlist and just put it on a speaker. And I think with that, it was for me, since I had that much control, it allowed me to kind of create. Or play the music that I was listening to at the time in there. Like, you know, it allowed people to look at the paintings and experience it with the music that was played while I painted. So
was did that specific exhibit feel like a different experience because of you kind of had more control over the whole thing?
I guess so. I mean, for the most part.
I feel like it's so hard when you like to ask artists things because to you it's just such a natural, like any type of art, whether it's like a musician or whatever, like asking them questions, it's like for them it's just kind of like a natural thing for them sometimes to create things. So it's like to question you about it is so like, you're like, I don't know, it's just kind of like in me, like I just do these things.
Yeah, definitely. I think it, I don't really know how to answer that question, really. I guess it's just it's there.
It's in your. It's in me.
It's in me. I just do it. Yeah. It's just it's a. I don't know. It's just a motivator every now and then. But I've not created anything based on sound, which was something I wanted to eventually do. Maybe. I mean, I do like illustrations and paintings based on like characters that I do read in books, but nothing really. Like musically based.
So have you ever like been in the studio working and you have something on and you're like, I'm not vibing with this or I'm not feeling it and I just need to shut it off or I need to change it to something else?
Yeah, sometimes that happens like at 3 a.m. like all of a sudden. It's just I guess the only thing that didn't really come to mind was when I was listening to I don't know if it's Undertow or, I think it was Undertow from Tool. And it was just like Tool albums, I noticed at the very, I get the last track, the secret tracks are very loud and it's like really creepy. And it's like, for some reason, I just like creeps me out. I'm like in this old building at 3 a.m. that like
makes already, a bunch of noises.
It already creeps me out to begin with. I mean, you hear all the creaks and everything of it, like especially that late. And so I'm probably just like scaring myself. But yeah, that's kind of when I'm like, oh, okay, I'm going to shut this off and I'm going to play something. Or I'm like, oh, I think I've creeped out.
I'm going to put Judy Garland on.
I'm going to put Judy Garland. Where's Judy at?
Get Judy in here right now.
Yeah, where's Judy?
Talking to yourself. Like, where's my Judy?
Where's Judy?
So as far as like actual vinyl records, have you been like... slowly just over time like you buy stuff or like how old were you when you kind of took an interest in it, if there was even a time that you can think of?
Actually it was I was gifted a it was Head on the Door by The Cure and Pornography. It was a gift from someone who I didn't have a record player at all. They just knew that I liked The Cure and it was they just gave it to me. You know, they said, hey, you know, I have these here and like no one's going to use it. And I think it was like his older brother's like collection that he never picked up. I don't know what the story was exactly.
So around how old were you?
Oh, at that time, I was actually probably like in my late teens.
You know, okay.
I didn't have And at that, most times, like, it was mostly like burned CDs and cassettes that I, you know.
But that's how it was in that era. Like, you yeah. do, that's what you did.
Yeah, definitely. It was much easier. It was around like the beginning, I guess, maybe like Napster and like LimeWire, I think.
So, did you ever use actual Napster? Because I never used Napster, but I did use like LimeWire and stuff like that.
Well, I had friends. So, there was that one friend who had a like computer
that
at home.
That had the access to everything.
Yeah. He was the only friend who had like a desktop. So, we're like, give him a list and like some money and be like, can you download this and put it on a CD?
Yeah, you had that one kid who had the fast. He didn't have 56K dial-up, so he can download songs in like a minute.
Yeah, he wasn't that far yet.
Yeah, we weren't there.
It was like, oh, let's hope no one calls.
You're like, damn it.
Yeah.
Oh, man, the seven-minute song, it took 2 hours to download. Yeah. We're almost there, and then someone calls and ruins the whole dang thing.
Yeah, so it was that era, like in, I guess, 2000. I mean, like around that time, it was when I got the vinyl, it was probably when I was like maybe 17, 18, and I hadn't had a record yet. And I see it everywhere and I just kind of appreciate it, but I never. And then I just started afterwards, I just started collecting records and started hunting for a record player so I could listen to these records that I got. Cause like Head on the Door is probably I mean, it's really a rad album. I like it. I think like Japanese Whisper by like The Cure is like one of my favorite albums. Like Japanese Whisper and maybe Disintegration.
Have you ever seen The Cure perform?
No, I haven't. I was like very fortunate enough to see the Depeche Mode though.
Oh, really? So. When did you see them the last time they came?
Yeah, I think it was the last time they were here. Me and my mom, we got tickets.
Oh, that's awesome.
Well, it was a gift to my mom and she brought me along and it was like, oh man, we were like,
it was an awesome experience.
It was, yeah. It was like a lot of moms and their kids.
No, like life coming full circle.
Basically, it was kind of funny to see, you know, in the crowd. You know, I was just like, oh man. But I was like, cool. I get to, you know, finally get to see David.
Right now, Zia on Camelback has a box set, and I was so tempted to buy it. But like I said, we're trying to be good and not spend any money on records. So I'm like, I have enough right now. I shouldn't need to be buying that much more, but. There is a box set and it's a box set of the 12-inch singles.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, should I get this or not? It wasn't like $100 or anything like that, but just letting you know, I think that's really up your alley.
Yeah. Well, with singles, that's what I'm barely getting into collecting. Is like singles. You try to.
You're getting into dangerous territory, Jeff.
Yeah, it's like an expensive territory too.
Yeah, I know. But it depends too, because like if you get like a lot of singles that I buy, they used to be like $1, $2 for $1, and now I notice the price is starting to go up, and they're like $4, $5, and then depending on what it is, it's sometimes even more, and it gets to the point where I'm just like, I'm going to be like, oh, I guess I'll just buy the LP because I'll pay like maybe $5 more and get more songs. It just depends on my mood.
Yeah, I feel the same way too. I think only if I wanted the remixes, if I wanted like 5 remixes of one song, I'd buy the single.
But what sucks is like I wish too they still did a lot of like instrumentals.
Oh yeah, I noticed that. But yeah, I mean.
So if you have any weird records, DM Jeff.
Yeah, typically I'm always looking for Tuxedo Moon.
So what artists are you listening to like right now? Are there any current artists that you're listening to, or is it just like mostly 80s and 90s tunes?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it's. I don't know how current. I mean, like.
Within like the past 2 years, that's what I think.
Like a past 2 years, like release.
Like yeah, something that came out.
Oh dang! Like I don't know. Like I barely got a Spotify like maybe 4 months ago, and I think that's just like I've like been excited looking at everything, but I end up looking at old music.
Music you already have.
Yeah, music I already like have been listening to, but I get to listen to the entire discography, so I'm like, oh yes. So as for current, shoot, I don't know. Nothing really. I think there hasn't been anything that I've been.
Like that's jumping out at you that you can't particularly remember? Like this was kind of newer and I was listening to it. There's nothing jumping out?
No.
So do you ever, like I have times where like I'll be working or whatever it is And I'll be like, you know what? I'm going to listen. Like, I kind of know this band's discography, or I am familiar with it, but I'm going to take the time in that one day, if it's possible, I'm going to listen to from literally the beginning to their last album, like every single one. Have you ever done that?
I usually start from their very first album and then work my way up. And yeah. Then,
have you ever listened to anything and you were like, you couldn't make it through it?
Yeah, and like David Bowie.
You're all, I gotta, man. He's gotta keep it real.
Yeah, like I collect a lot of like David Bowie on vinyl, but it's like late 60s too. Like, I think 81, I think. That's the only, like, within a decade I'd like to collect all of that. I have all of it, all the LPs on vinyl. But beyond that, I'm kind of like, I don't know. I mean, I could dig some of it, but not.
No, so you don't like Let's Dance?
You're like, I see why other people like it.
I like it. I just don't.
You just don't vibe with it, yeah.
Yeah, just like the rest of the album, basically.
Or I was going to ask you, because there's some songs, and Andrew hates me, but so there's some songs where I'm like, I know it's not a bad song, and it's not that I like the song, but I've heard this song. It's just one of those that I've heard so much, and I'm just like, if I never hear it again, I just won't care. Like, Let's Dance is like, what, like, you know what yeah. I mean? And you're like, oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's like a go-to, which is like nothing wrong with it. I mean, and I guess I don't really.
I'm gonna play that on Friday for you.
Yeah, play it. Yeah. <Let's Dance. laughs> yeah. No, I guess this isn't current. Shoot. His name is, I can't think of his name right now. Oh, Connor, I think it's Connor, I think it's not Moccasin, but it's spelled almost similar to Moccasin. I like the stuff from that album. I just kind of stumbled upon it. But yeah, nothing really like within the past 5 years, I guess. It's everything beyond that.
Do you have any record stores here that you frequent?
Yeah, usually. I mean, I live down the street from Grand Avenue Records, so I'll go there and like look through there. Recently, I got the Tuang Fu album from him.
I know. I was there the day he picked it up.
Yeah, I was able to find the Tuang Fu soundtrack. Well, he ordered it for me. I was looking for it, and we're talking. And he's like, "Oh, let me just order it for you." And I was like, "Oh, I don't really order vinyl online, or do I really order
you just kind of dig and find stuff?"
Yeah, like, I don't even really order anything offline in general. I mean, maybe a t-shirt or some art supplies, but nothing beyond that. But other than that, I really like Record Room. That one's on Dunlap, and Double Nickels, right? Like, but like we mentioned before, I was talking with Andrew about that, about both of them. Actually, just saying that I feel like I have to go in there with lots of money, I guess. Like, yeah, I'm gonna be willing to drop like $60 plus $100. You know, like, it's just,
you know, you're gonna find something when you go in there.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I just, because it carries a lot of what I like, typically. You know,
I think it was the last episode we mentioned. Oh no, it was on the Cadiff episode that we just did that we mentioned Double Nickels, and we're like, when you go in there, like, the people that have their stuff in there, they really like enjoy music, and they really like know their stuff. So the stuff you find in there, you're probably not going to find anywhere else.
Yeah, I feel, yeah, each record store has its own thing, you know. I mean, I'll go to like Coco Spot. And
we love Coco. We always say we're biased on the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. I go there and I'm like, oh man, he has this, and I got to get it. So it's like all those three, you know, I have to go in there willing. Like, I'm going to be walking out with something pretty expensive for at least me and my own personal budget. But like, yeah, Double Nickels, every time I go in there, I just find a lot of what I'm looking for, which is kind of, probably like no wave, or like a lot of like synth pop, a lot of things like post punk music, I guess, a lot of experimental stuff. And then, you know, I'll go to Record Room and I'll find, you know, I found a lot of like really affordable, like T Rex and King Crimson albums. Usually, King Crimson to me is usually a little pricey.
That reminds us of you.
Yeah, I mean, everyone, there's like one King Crimson album that everyone is supposed to own. I don't think we own it.
I don't think we have it.
I don't think we have it, but you know, it's just like the face.
Or he's yelling?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, I mean, I know it's such a great album, but it's like, I sat and I listened to it, and I'm like, I mean, I get it, but I'm like, I guess this is like what everybody has to have in their collection, and I don't.
But every time we see it, we're like, Jeff.
Jeff likes look, that
it's
album.
Jeff. It's Jeff.
Yeah, like, it's like, that's Jeff music.
Yeah, well, yeah, like I think that's really a rad album, but I think the album that I like the most from them, I think it's called Lizard. Let me double check, because I don't want to get it. But I mean, yeah, like a lot of like King Crimson stuff is just amazing to me. I think what I first heard was from their Beat album. That one's probably like in the 80s. I think that's the...
Always going back to the 80s, Joe.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is just kind of... I'm stuck, yeah, in a lot of like 70s and 80s like music. But yeah, that was kind of what I heard, and it stuck with me and always followed through on it. So whatever, that's kind of where I usually go to see if it's even there. So yeah, it's called Lizard. Yeah, the double
He's
check.
Like, I was right.
Yeah, I was right.
Girl, you had a correction corner too.
Oh, yes, really quick. Okay, I have a correction. So in the last episode, I said that the Basement Beehive was pressed by the Preservation Project, but it was actually by the Numero Group. So my bad on that. But I did post it, and I posted it correctly. And it was wonderful. And it's like all these underground girl groups. But it's amazing. So when you went and were digging in Tucson, did you find anything?
Yeah, like I was able to find that Billy Paul album. And I found that at Wooden Tooth. And then the Kitaro album and Judy Garland I found at Studio G. The days that we were there, we wanted to check out like these other record stores that I don't really remember. I don't remember the names of them, but they weren't open at the time. I don't really go to Tucson as often, and so every time I'm there, it's like a Monday or a Tuesday, and I've noticed that things aren't really open on a Monday or Tuesday either. So, but yeah, we were there, and so yeah, Studio G. I was shopping with my partner Rosie, and which I don't really get to as often. I think since she's in you guys, since she started your collective, she's just like, I'm like, come on, shop with me. And I don't think she's in it as much as I am, but I always just say it's probably because you're with me. Maybe if you were with
other people.
Yeah, maybe if you were the ladies, you would have more fun. Me, I'm like, I don't know, maybe not.
You want to tell them your secret system, Jeff?
My secret system? Yeah. I don't know if it's a secret. Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I just have a way of picking out records, and it's usually more so like when I'm kind of on a budget. And so it's what I was telling Andrew is that I think what it is, it's just like I'll look through all the records and I'll base it on the price. Yeah, and I'll the one that I find, and I'll put it like in the front or the back of that pile. And I have it in the back of my mind. I'm like, all right, if I can find an album that tops that one and it might be more expensive, then I'll go with that one. If not, then... So I found a Judy Garland. Judy Garland was like $2.99. And I, in the back of my mind, I was like, I went straight back. We're ready to check out. And then Rosie asked me if I was ready. And I like started shooting around the store, grabbing all the ones that I was like, all right, I stayed under like a $10 budget, you know, finding all these other ones. But... I guess I always like it would be cool to take one of my younger siblings with me and then let them shop for me, because now it's like two hands and two eyes like looking for. I was like, hey, look for this King Crimson. I'll look for this, because I was at Bookman's and I saw this one guy. He was a father and he was with kids, and he was looking at the comic book store, and for a comic book that they found, he would like, I think it was like every five, I don't know what it was, but it seemed like for every five comic books that they found that he could found use for, whatever, for his collection, he would give him like a comic book. So he had like three kids just rummaging through comic books, and they were like, look, Dad, look at this. Do you want this? And he's like, no, I don't want that one. Or someone's like, you want this? He's like, all right, cool. And they just put it in piles. And I always just thought it's like, huh, like. If it could either bring my siblings or have kids, so I could do that.
Well, when you first said you saw a father, I think it's this French press going to my brain, but I thought you meant like a priest. Oh. I was like picturing a priest. I'm like, oh no, he's talking.
I was like, why does that priest have kids?
<I know>. Yeah, the father.
That's totally on me, though. It's not you.
Yeah, me and Dre have an advantage over a lot of people because we collect the same things. Yeah. So we will be like tearing through like stacks of records.
And people look at us
and they'll be like, because and we just start pulling and be like, and then but I mean there's been times where I go through a stack that she already went through and I'll find something, and there's plenty of times where I go through a stack and then she goes through it and she's like, you missed this.
It can get dangerous because then you're like, hey, you didn't see this, huh?
Like, what else did you miss? There's like 7 stacks you already went through. I'm like, well, then you can go through yourself.
I'm like, okay.
But we have to leave because we've been here for 2 hours. Let's start consolidating because we don't need all these records.
So I think it's so interesting because I love Judy Garland. Andrew doesn't hate her, but I think he just doesn't have an opinion. So how did you like start liking, like what made you into Judy Garland? Was it like the movies or show tunes? Or
just movies and show tunes. My grandma used to listen to like oldies, and some of it were like Judy Garland, Patsy Cline. You know, a lot of other names that I can't really remember, but it was, most times it was like greatest hits of like either like the 50s or 60s, 40s. Because I used to live with her when I was a kid, and when we were living on the reservation, there was really like, it was like cassettes or like the radio. And then the radio kind of played a lot of like old country. And so like I just, that's where it came from. You know, like the movies as well. But like I think a lot of it came from that, just because I would wake up, because I would have to wake up like, around like 5 o'clock in the morning just to catch like a bus, like it's like I think maybe 6:30, because I lived like about 40 minutes away from school, so I had to wake up really early and then top it off.
From high school?
No, it was in elementary.
Elementary, okay.
So this is like a long time, a while back, and so I think that's where a lot of it came from. But the reason why I was looking for that particular song is because it was I originally heard that, I probably heard it before, you know, but it was a band that covered it. It was Acid and Airport, and it was just an amazing song. Like, it's probably one of my favorite songs. Their version of it, and just the drumming and everything about it, and just the band itself. But I think they really did a beautiful version of it. And I always think it's kind of, when I hear covers, I'm like, I don't know. But this one, I was like, whoa, this is really awesome. I probably would make Judy Garland happy.
Yo, Judy.
Judy. Judy.
That French press is getting Dre all wild. Judy.
So, do you feel like, what was I going to say? Like, so like we said, when did you really start though, like creating art? Have you always, like since you were younger, like you would draw, or was it something that it developed as when you were older?
Yeah, I guess it's something that I've been doing since I was a kid. I've been drawing a lot of figurative stuff. Originally wanted to do like get into comic books. But yeah, I've always just drew since I was a kid, and just I think it's just always been there. It's always just been asking that question. It's like, oh, how long have you been doing this? And it's like,
my whole life technically.
Yeah, whole life. Yeah, I think it's always just been illustrations. Just think, yeah. And it wasn't until probably maybe my mid-20s that it actually started to become more
like developed?
Yeah, I started to develop, and right now I think I'm reaching a moment where it's becoming, where it's a little more concrete than what it was. But it was just all the development of it going through time with like working with an art collective and kind of learning how to paint on a larger scale, and even just learning how to paint in general, because a lot of the times it was mostly like ink and pen, and maybe like kind of like watercolor, but it was more like ink washes. But I've always been doing like a lot of figurative work, and I think that's why I was, because I would pretty much like copy what I would see like in comic books, or a lot of it was like Wizard. I was really into just looking at that, like,
you talking about Wizard?
The publication that usually would show like prices.
Yes, I used to you used to get Wizard too, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it was a lot of that, and then I would get like comic books, and collected a lot of like heavy metal. Really liked the artwork of like Mobius, and a lot of just work from like either like Dark Horse Presents, and it was a lot of this I feel it was a lot of independent artists. Like, I really liked their styles. And I never really got into, like, Marvel or DC. I mean, I appreciate the work, but I think it was a lot of it was, like, heavy metal and Dark Horse Presents. And mostly, like, yeah, Dark Horse Presents. It was just, like, because a lot of it was just black and white. And it was just live. I'm also, Frank Fazzotti. So things like that, like the cross hatchings, like, yeah. And then it branched off into what it is now. And I think that didn't really develop until maybe, like I said, my mid-20s.
So do you still read, like, comic books or anything?
Well, yeah. I think when I, have time.
Yeah, exactly.
So, like you said, it was more like your mid-20s when you said you're... You know, the start being a concrete thing. Like, when did you decide to do this, like, full time, that you're going to be a full time artist, or?
Yeah, basically.
Do you feel like you've faced any challenges as an artist, like people either pigeonholing you or not taking you seriously or anything like that?
No, not really. I think if anything, like, I'm the one who would be holding myself back. If anything, but it's. I think what allowed the work to kind of progress is when I started working for Arizona Opera. I started working for them as a scenic painter. So I was able to have, like, this, like, a consistent paycheck. So I was able to, like, progress with the work because it allowed me to kind of paint what I wanted and not what people were expecting of me. So I think a lot of that helped out. And then also just working with an art collective that... when they did a lot of, like, large-scale paintings and murals, we do a lot of, like, mural workshops. And so that's where a lot of the color came from, and working out with that. Because for a while, with the artists that I worked with, we had a very cohesive style, and they kind of taught me a lot from it. So I moved from that and then actually started, you know, branching out and kind of creating a style for myself. But the work itself, yeah, I think it's just kind of, just kind of thankful about the whole position with Arizona Opera, because, like I said, it just allowed the work to expand.
Like, it opened the door for you to be like, oh, okay. Like, was that the first time you kind of were able to, like do something and be like, I can do this full time. Like, it's actually something that I can pursue.
Yeah. It was something of that sort. Because, I had the consistent paycheck that would able to, like, pay for the rent on the studio, pay for other things that needed to be paid for bills. And so I wasn't always relying on having to, like, I mean, now I'm with Arizona Opera, it's like off and on. I do work for Arizona Opera and Phoenix Theater. And then and I've been doing the work for the, you know, like, commissions and different things like that. So it's kind of falling back into that again, trying to do more commissioned work and maybe even murals. I'm going to be working on one here shortly. It's a collaboration with this organization out in Mesa, which I forget their name. I mean, I know the organizer. She's a friend of mine. They worked here at the bookstore on book bindings, and then she approached me and asked if I'd be willing to create the layout and possibly kind of facilitate a mural.
They do the book bindings?
Yeah, the book bindings.
Or is it the Cardboard House?
Yeah, Cardboard House Press.
Okay.
So, yeah, they're here and they do their workshop. And one of the days asked if I'd be willing to do it, if they were able to get the funding for it. So I'm working on that.
How is, like, because I feel like I tell people, like, networking, it's like a lot more work sometimes than people think. Like, do you like networking? Because some people don't. They're like, it's necessary, and I don't, like, always enjoy it, but I have to do it. Like,
yeah, I think that's probably why I, like, from the beginning, how you talk about people are aware of me and my work. It's just probably because I've just networked. You know, I went to these different things, these different events, but at the same time, I mean, I just showed up at events just because I know the artists, and so when I'm there. Conversations happen and they ask me, like, what do you, who are you? Or since I'm talking to the artist, maybe they're like, oh, who's this artist talking to or whatnot? I don't know. It's just, but yeah, I think networking does play a large role in it. And I think to be able to be willing to talk, it makes a really big difference.
To have the kind of the personality for, because I feel like some people are naturally networkers and they're like, hey, and then some people are more like, I have to push myself out there to do it. Like, the, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think I kind of feel that way about it. I tend to feel like I kind of push myself into it. I don't really, I mean, I guess I could.
I'm just Jeff.
yeah, just
let me break it down for you. I'm just myself.
We actually how we actually met you was funny. It was at the it was like at Tres Leches, and it was we came to I don't know if we were coming to play music or we were just went to get coffee and like sit down. But we met you at the cafe, right? That's where we initially met you.
Yeah, that was like 2 years ago.
No, it was like a year ago.
It was like
something
2 years.
Like that. I don't know. Wait, like I said, we can't keep track of time. Once you get past 30, you don't care.
Yeah, I guess.
You're just like, I don't know when yesterday was, I don't know.
So you were saying that you would go to those events for different artists. Do you think it's really, I mean, we obviously on this podcast, we always talk about supporting local people and supporting other events. Do you think that's really important? Like, how important is that to you?
Yeah, I think it's important. I mean, I do try to attend, and not as much lately just because of my position here at the bookstore. So most times when we do have events are probably the same times, typical times that people are having their own personal events. And so,
like last night.
Yeah, like last night. So like I wanted to attend an art show out in Mesa, and I wasn't attend because it was the exact same time as the event here at the bookstore. So that usually prevents me from going places. But yeah, I think it's very important. I like to be able to go out there and support others, to go check out the work itself, like in person, rather than seeing it like on my phone.
On Instagram.
on Instagram. I think it's nice to appreciate the work in person, to see. To me, I like looking at it at all different angles, you know, how it was built, the textures of it, everything else, even the lighting and how it affects it there. So it's always cool just to check it out. And then I know people come and support my work too. So I think it's just
people are supporting you. You want to show the support back.
Basically, yeah.
So we're actually, I don't think we mentioned it at the beginning. We're actually recording here again at Palabras. I think this is our third episode.
Yeah. It's our third episode here
that we've recorded here, and Jeff has his art here. He's kind of has his own little like semi gallery space, right? That you're kind of carving out in the bookstore.
Yeah. So yeah, in November there'll be a first Friday event. I'll be showing with one of her volunteers. Well, she started off as a volunteer. She used to originally be in a collective called Mala, and we'll be sharing the walls together. Her name is Adriana, and that show is going to be in November. It's going to be the first Friday of November.
Cool. And I think actually the Crate Creepers are going to be playing that a bit too, only because I had coordinated with Rosie that we're supposed to be here every first Friday starting in November.
Yeah.
So you're going to have those sweet, sweet tunes here.
Yeah, sweet, sweet tunes. It's going to be back to back.
I'm going to have Return of the Mac all day.
Return of the Mac, yeah.
Return of the Mac and Just Dance.
Return of the Mac. Did you find it?
I'm still looking. I have a lot of stuff to look at.
Dre's making a special set just for you, Jeff.
Yeah, I am actually. I was working on it before we came over.
She'll be closing.
Yeah, I think I'm going to play last. I'll let everybody else play.
She's all, it's me. So a question I had for you is like all your pieces that you do have like different, they're like portraits or like a play on something. So like, who are the people that you paint?
Well, they range from like friends, most like friends, myself, and family members. I've been doing a series where I've been, pretty much depicting myself, and it's me wearing I don't know, it's not the skin, but it's pretty much like a coyote's head on top of mine.
It's pelt.
Yeah, I guess like a pelt. Pretty much I'm just wearing like, it's more so as kind of a mask, and that's what it started off as a mask, and that's what I've been working on, and that's kind of my interpretation of coyote and how this being plays a role in Navajo culture, plays a role in my life. So that's kind of where a lot of it is a depiction of. A lot of the work that I do is, I guess, my own personal interpretations of Navajo creation stories. It's me trying to capture what I believe is like ancestral, traditional, and modern, and all in one piece. Like one I did a while back was like me as a coyote, and it was like coyote legs, and it was like a play on a Diamond Dog album cover from David Bowie, where he's like half of his leg is like half of his body's a dog, and the other half is him, like his top half. So I, instead of dog legs, have coyote legs, and then I have like Navajo words in the back because there's like neon signs, and so there's words, but I use like Navajo. So the idea behind it was like ancestral would be like these creation stories and using the coyote. Traditional would be my way of how I depicted that was the language, because the language wasn't ever a written language until, you know, the mid-1900s, I guess. Yeah, and modern is the David Bowie, my, you know, how that influences the work. And I guess, yeah, music does like intertwine with a lot of things that I do. Yeah, it's more than just listening to it. It's just kind of the appreciation for like the album covers itself, the music and everything else, and what goes into it, the compositions. That's kind of just been the series I've been working on. Some of it's been a friend of mine, his name is Ryan Dennison, who like even performs as Pollen Boy, and he's performed at a lot of my shows, and he's been in part of the work itself, and we've even collaborated together on another project that I did, and that was this photography series that I did. And it's individuals that I really appreciate, and they're willing to work with me, I guess, in a sense, collaborate. I don't know. I guess it's kind of hard to describe the work without it being physically in front of like you.
Yeah.
But it's along the lines of that. Like I said, a lot of it's based on like Navajo culture and my interpretation of it.
Has it always been that way, or is it something that like it came, you noticed, started coming through in your art as you got older?
Yeah, it wasn't until I really got older. I think it was just kind of strongly based on just a shift in my own personal lifestyle. A lot of it had to do with like sobriety. A lot of it had to do with just kind of just dealing with like personal issues and stuff like that. And so it was like, but it's always been there. I mean, my dad has always went to ceremonies growing up. He was like really, I wouldn't say traditional, but he...
Like, you he's know. Connected?
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he is, and he still is. I mean, it was just, like, he never really, like, pressured me to go to these, like, ceremonies or anything. His whole idea was that eventually I would pretty much return to it on my own. And then,
was he right?
Yeah, in a way, yeah. And I'm glad, yeah. I think it's just, like, his whole method was, like, I'm not going to pressure you into it because it could probably make you, like, dislike it, even hate it. So, you know, I was just, like... So I'm happy that he had that like connection with it. I mean, he still would bring me to ceremonies anyways, and sometimes I, you know, wouldn't have a choice. And this was when I was younger, and yeah, like now I have like a, you know, a stronger appreciation for it. And but yeah, I think it's just that's a lot of it plays into that. But I think the work itself is gonna, I feel, go into a different direction. I mean, a lot of it, it's just kind of, I'm adding a lot of animals, a lot of plants. And I think it's just as I get older and as, you know, just my own personal journey, I think it just will always, like, kind of play into the paintings that I'm doing.
Yeah, and do you actually sell some of the pots that you paint here at Palabras, or?
Oh, yeah, I've been painting on those pots. Yeah, it's just, you know, wasn't probably about maybe several months back I really started, like, getting into plants. You know, it's always been there, you know, like, again, like, you know, it's always been like in the shadows, like, because my dad's always like, you know, had gardens and different things like that, and I always been around it since I was like a teenager. But it wasn't until like recently somehow, yeah, I just kind of found myself with it and like
took to it
basically. Yeah, it was I was gifted a moringa, and I still have the moringa. It's sitting on the porch, and eventually, I'll put it in the ground, you know, Rosie's always like, it wants to be a tree. It's just sitting in a, it's sitting in a big pot, and yeah, she's like, it wants to be a tree. You should, you know. I was like, yeah, you're right. So, you know, eventually when I, you know, me and this tree kind of go our own ways, but it's, you know, like with the pots, yeah, I've been painting on the pots, the terracotta pots, and I'm putting in plants that I've like, lately it's been plants that I have been collecting, or mostly like recently they've mostly been like trimmings. Like I'll maybe buy a plant here and there from different nurseries, and then I'll like ask if, you know, but their trimmings, if there's anything, or if I'm walking down the street, because I know that a lot of these trimmings are probably just going to be swept away. You know, it's not going to be this like natural propagating, naturally propagating or anything like that. Yeah. So like I take it with me and then I put it in a pot, and then most times I usually just gift it out. You know, it's to me, it's kind of, I give my siblings like these little plants, you know, it's to me, it's kind of giving them this little responsibility, I guess, you know, taking care of this plant or taking some care of something outside of themselves. Kind of this realization that, that there's life beyond just humans, you know, having this consideration for like animals and plants and
the respect kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely. So I think that's where that the work is, you know, has been going. So yeah, yeah, that's where the pots are, and the pots are here. You know, I try to make as many. It's just a lot goes into it, you know, a lot of like curing it and everything else, so that it could withstand, you know, time.
Yeah. So you won't take it home and it's like, oh, okay. It's like you wanted to be able to, like you're saying, weather everything.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, because there's, when I first started doing it, I there was a few things that I, a few steps that I do now that I didn't do that would, it, I noticed that it was messing up the artwork. And for most part, I feel like whenever I do like commissions or I sell pieces, I'm hoping that they'll last at least the collector's lifetime. Because for a while there, I was painting on just random things. I was really into stuff that aged quickly. Like it was, I don't really know the name of the artist or who it was, but it was a part of this, like, I guess the like Dada movement. And what they did, what they would do is like put sandpaper inside the sleeves of records. And so every time you pulled it out to listen to it, it destroyed it every time. And so it, I really like liked that concept. It was just this very temporary thing, and I feel that's just what humans, you know, we have this lifespan on Earth that's not, I mean, it's 100 years is a long time. I mean, if you live that long, but sometimes, yeah. Shit, you know.
It's not infinite.
It's not infinite, and, you know, any, you know, a lot of crazy, anything could happen. So I just feel like I would like that with the work, and that's probably why, I mean, I started painting on wood, you know, because I know that wood starts to age quicker than, like, canvas. And I started putting on, like, resin that I know that eventually time the patina will build up in these resins that I'm using that are, you know, normally used to, like, put on wood and different things like that. So I like that. I like the idea that the work may only last the collector's lifetime and not go beyond that.
Have you ever been into any of like what people consider the classic artists, like a, like Picasso or Van Gogh or any of that? Like, does it speak to you at all, or is it more like you appreciate it because it's there and you understand why it's important, but it doesn't affect you that much?
Mm. I mean, there's things I like to look at. I really like the work of like T.C. Cannon, or like, I think his name is Caravaggio, or different people from like the Cubist movement. But other than that, yeah, I mean, I appreciate as much as I can. Yeah, okay. Everyone has their own styles, and like, but for a while, I try not to be fully influenced by the work, because I feel like I don't know, like I'm taking something away. Yeah, but there are a few artists that I will talk with, and they'll like give me pointers or like suggest something to me, and most times, you know, I'm open to criticism unless it's like someone, you know, going out,
ridiculous.
Yeah, someone going out of the way to be rude or something.
So, do you think it's important to engage with other artists, like within your own community, to kind of, like you're saying, because okay, his Andrew's cousin David, he is an artist, and he says that within the past, I can't name like a number exactly, but whatever amount of time that he doesn't really have a favorite artist as much as when he was younger and he was more consumed in it. Cause he's like, I don't want to be, he's like, I know it sounds, I'm not an artist, so I don't understand maybe, but he's like, I don't want to be even maybe subconsciously influenced and like I'm copying someone and maybe, so he's like, I don't really keep up with a lot of like current stuff. He's like, there's a lot of stuff that I have old influences from, but I don't know. Is that something that you feel as well? Like you said, you're like, I don't really.
Yeah, I guess to some extent. I mean, I really enjoy my conversations with Abe, if I'm a Bloom. But most times when we do talking, it's like it's techniques on texturizing, like before we like lay the figures and everything on there. And I think it's with those that I really appreciate with talking with different artists is like the very like beginning developing of it. The how you built your frame, like what kind of wood you use, like what was the medium, you know, like all these different things, like how did you get that texture, you know, like. And he's, for me, I feel like he's like one of maybe few artists that I know that are willing to talk about that and not in a way that I doesn't make me feel like I'm asking and I'm stealing, you know. It's just like
a sharing
thing. yeah because I already have my own way, you know, like I don't really like. If anything, if I hear something from somebody that makes that process more easy, then I'll probably use it. But most times, I mean, I like my textures and everything are just basically just like gesso and just like a lot of oops paint. Yeah, I just oops paint that I buy from like Home Depot and I just splash it around and create the texture of the work. But and I have like a steel comb brush that gets in there that was gifted to me from a collector of mine who worked in theater for over 20 years. So it's like, you know, I'm more interested in the process of before like the actual, you know,
that not the end result, but just yeah, like the end result, how yeah. did you get there maybe more like what did you do, like the more in like stuff that me personally, because I don't know anything about art, you're interested in that aspect of it, because I'm like interested in the finished product. I'm like, oh, look at that, like how nice.
Yeah.
But you're like, I want to know how you got there.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'm more interested in that. And I have friends who were like musicians who were like, what machine did you use? Yeah, what was that? Yeah, like
do you know who Jay Dilla is?
Yeah.
He's okay. So Dilla, like one of the things is people are always like, what did he use? What like to make all the drum beats? Like what they want to know, literally the exact machine, exact model, and everything, because. And then they're like, no. Or Prince was another thing when they interviewed the Revolution after Prince passed away. And then they were like, well, what, you know, what drums are, and they're like, we're not telling you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like questions like that. But it's also like, how did you get that sound? Because yeah, I had some friends who would ask like, well, how did you get there? Like, well, yeah. And it's like, and I guess it's the same with paintings. It's like, oh man. But yeah, like I said, when I go to like different art shows, I like to see like, I'm looking on the edges. Like, I'm like, huh, I wonder what.
More the breakdown of
it. Yeah, like, wonder how to cut that. Because, like, when I build my frames, I'm not really getting into it too fancy. Most times I'm just using scraps, whatever I can find or whatever has been left out for me. You know, that's just kind of my method of it. Unless it's like a commission. If it's a commission, then obviously I'm going to buy, like a good piece of wood or something, or whatever they prefer, either canvas or wood. But for the stuff that I do for shows, it's just whatever I can find around me because I have a lot of scraps at the studio.
So as far as you, I know you, are you currently accepting commissions?
Yeah, I'm always
pretty open to them.
Yeah, I'm pretty open to them. And yeah.
And you've actually done album art, correct?
Yeah. This past year, I've been, like I said, fortunate enough to like do two of them. One of them was for Turquoise Noise. It's about a band based out of Oakland. And how I got that was just I went to one of their shows, and I know the lead singer's name is Rocky, and he been wanting me to do some work for him, and we just kind of, he's like, oh, hey, you're here, yeah. And
right time,
like,
right place.
Yeah, right, yeah, it was, you know, and commissioned me to do the cover. And then there's also a individual from Flagstaff who does a lot of like beats, you know, this is Cecil. And he has like commissioned me to do work too. And I did something for his like solo album. And, but that was kind of interesting because that one, he wanted me to do a landscape. And I normally don't do landscapes, but he was just like, I'd like to see what you would do with the landscape. So I was like,
did it challenge you?
Yeah, definitely. I just like, it's, it was. It was a little challenging, and I was like, all right, cool. You know, I was really happy that he asked me to. He's like a brother of mine who lives in Flagstaff. It's Cecil, who's the person who creates the beats for him, and they have their own crew up there, and now it's an illustrated mess. And eventually, I'd like them to perform at one of the shows that I have. So they have their own thing going on up there, which is pretty cool. And I'm happy to see my, one of my younger brothers doing what he's, he's happy about. And I mean, it was really cool though for the Turquoise Noise because it was the cover of a vinyl. So it was like I always wanted to do the cover of a vinyl
release.
All
back around you in music. Yeah, yes.
I was like really happy about it. I was like also I was super excited, and the way it came out was. I mean, the printing of it, everything, even the record and the inside, it was like...
So how did you feel when you saw it? Were you like, oh, okay, like...
It was like, whoa, yeah. It's like, oh, man, this is so awesome. Like, it was just... It was cool. It was just like, I have my own copy, and I've been wanting to, like, frame it, you know, but just haven't got around to it yet. It's actually in my studio. Like, I listened to it. I liked the band, too. So it's like, I wasn't, like, commissioned to, like... paint something for a band I really
for Britney Spears
yeah for something I didn't really care, but I probably wouldn't have either way, you know, like if it was like I don't know, that was the only reason why I did is because I like their music.
So if anybody wanted to contact you, they would just contact you on Instagram for a commission?
Yeah, through best way would probably be Instagram.
The All Electric Kitchen.
Yeah, what's up with the All Electric Kitchen? Is that just another song name or?
No, it's actually like, it's been like a handle I've had since I was a teenager. Since like the, you know, when the chat room days, I guess.
Did you ever go on AOL?
Oh, it was Yahoo.
Yahoo, I was going to say MSN, AOL, Yahoo. Those are the three.
So yeah, it was something I like had and it just stuck. It just came from like some poem I read and, high school is something talking about like the whole like nuclear age and everything becoming electric, and just stuck, the All Electric Kitchen. And it's kind of funny because people will, you know, people have asked, are like, oh, you're the All Electric Kitchen. I'm like, yeah.
And my exhibit's called Electric People.
Electric People. It's like I said, it's a song from Beat Manifesto.
And is there anything, before we wrap it up here, is there anything, any advice, like, I know it sounds cheesy, but just anything you can go out there, even if it's just like, I don't have any advice or just do whatever you want to do. Any advice you would give to artists trying to come into their own style or develop what they want to do?
Oh, just keep practicing. I mean, that's kind of a lot of younger people have asked me, like, the same kind of question. Like, what do you do? And the idea is just keep working. You know, just keep practicing because, like, I'm sketching. I mean, not as much as I used to because, like, I think I'm pretty busy lately with just kind of doing the work here and then doing my own personal work. But for a while there, I was just doing, like, sketching constantly. It was, like, always be in that mindset. Sketching, doodling, you know, whatever you can, just always kind of have that constant warm-up. And just be open to, like, critiques. I think sometimes I've met some people who... you talk with them and they're very like offended by it, you know, like, so it's kind of be open to the fact that it's out there. People are going to see it. People are going to have something to say about it. Some people are probably going to hate it, you know, or dislike it. Or they're going to enjoy it. So, that's my only advice. Just keep doing what you're doing. And like, but you know, like, I don't know how else to say, but then, you know, don't be a dick about it.
So,
yeah.
Well, what do you do in those situations where someone is a dick, though? Like, someone is just, like, straight up, and you're like, you're not, like, critiquing me or giving me advice. You're just being an a-hole. Like, how do you do that?
Oh, I've been in that position, but I usually just kind of let it be. No one's really ever, like...
been crazy about it.
Yeah, I mean, I've been like, I hate your work, and it's like, or I hate you, or... Yeah, you know, it's just... I've never really came across that, I think... if anything, you know, I will kind of try to take whatever from it and
to see maybe why they're saying that, where they're coming from.
Oh yeah. Or just, you know, people have their own lives. People are always kind of feeling their own thing. You know, it probably has nothing to do with me. Yeah, that's kind of where I've come to, and I try to remember that, you know, something like...
Especially as you get older, right?
You're yeah, it's something like either my like Rosie or my dad would say, you know, it probably had nothing to do with you. You know, it was just a bad day for them, or bad week, or bad year, or just bad life.
Yeah, and sometimes with criticism, because we always tell people, like, give us feedback, tell us, like I said at the beginning, if you don't like our podcast, hey, let me know why. Maybe there is something, maybe there will be a kernel of truth in there where I can examine it and be like, oh, okay, like, I guess I see what they're saying or whatever. But I mean, for the most part, people have been pretty encouraging. Like we say, we're not professionals. We're just two regular people.
Yeah, and they also have a choice not to listen.
Yeah, exactly.
So they have a choice not to go to my shows or look at my work. But, you know, I'm not going to hate on it. That's like I said, it's their own person.
It's your life.
Yeah.
Do what you want. Do what you love.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Go out there and get it.
Get it. Come over here in Palabras and look at the artwork in the books, okay? And
buy all this shit.
You better look at the time for that. You customers can.
Oh, there's been plenty of cussing in this episode.
I tried my best not to.
Hey, you're doing good, Jeff. So, is there anything else you want to say before, like I said, before we wrap it up here?
No, just, yeah, like you said, we're here at the bookstore, and that's where I usually am. It's owned by my partner, Rosie. It's a Palabras bilingual bookstore. And, yeah, I mean, I'm always pushing that out there. I'm here, like, half to Tyron, and she's here the other half, and it's just kind of always just trying to acknowledge all the work that she's done and put into this place.
Yeah, because like we always say, if you haven't been in here, definitely come through and don't just come through and look. Like, you know, you can talk to Rosie or Jeff, you know, if you have questions. Or so can anyone come in? If anyone was like, oh, I was going to DM that All Electric Kitchen guy, but I'm actually right here. Can they come in and talk to you about a commission potentially?
Yeah. I mean, I'm always up.
Yeah, if I'm here, why not?
Yeah. I mean, it's, yeah, if it's something I can like do, then yeah. I'm open to it.
Anything else, Andrew?
No, nothing in particular. Just thank you so much, Jeff, for coming on with us. Thank you to Palabras for having us.
And one more time, give your Instagram handle.
The All Electric Kitchen.
Yes. And ours is Just Keep Spinning Podcast. Our email is justkeepspinningpodcast@gmail.com. You can listen to us on iTunes, Spotify,
anywhere
Google Play,
podcasts are found.
All pretty much anywhere podcasts are found. And I guess that's it. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, Palabras. Don't stop digging and just keep spinning.
Thanks, guys.